Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
100 years. 100 champions.
The Packers were crowned world champions in the gelid confines of their own arena.
A century of football is the backdrop for this NFL season.
Ring it. He's going to go all the way.
A centennial celebration of the ghosts. And the GOATs.
Montana launches it for the end zone. Jerry Rice!
The NFL at 100. What will happen next?
Oh, my God. Tyree just goes up for it like a basketball player.
It's 150 years of college football as new national powers emerge.
Hodgson throws for a touchdown with 1 second to go.
Superstars are dominating Saturdays like never before.
Jake wants to throw corner route to the right.
Right, they get.
Boy, you can't throw that football any better, Jake Fromm.
Find out every week. It's Sunday Morning Football with your host, T.A. Only on CBS Sports Radio.
And a happy Sunday morning to you, everybody. We come to you live for the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. We are so excited to be back for season number 4 of Sunday Morning Football. Every single week at this time, for the next 2 hours, we will break down what happened in college football on Saturday and then preview an NFL Sunday. Coming up this morning on the show, great guests. We've got Brian Greasy, who is handling the analysis work for Monday Night Football, the doubleheader game number 2, Broncos and Raiders, now an Oakland team without Antonio Brown. Of course, we'll get into that. He'll start us off coming up in about 15 minutes from now, and then later on in the hour, three-time All-Pro member of multiple rings of honor, Brian Mitchell, one of the greatest kick returners in NFL history, now a member of NBC Sports Washington, on Washington, Philadelphia, Dallas, and the Giants of the NFC East. So much to get to this morning on the show. We return with excessive celebration coming up this hour as well. The best play-by-play calls of college football's zaniness on Saturday. Later on in hour number 2, we've got your insiders, inside commentary from people that played the game and are around the game, and my football forecast, plus a Vegas viewpoint of today's NFL week number 1. So we have got it completely locked down. If this is the first time you've got a chance to listen to Sunday Morning Football, we have changed around the time slot here. We were 1 hour earlier the last 3 years. Now we're 1 hour later. So for your later risers, this is good. Also, we wanted to do this to fold into national NFL pregame coverage that begins at noon Eastern time. So many places, including right here on CBS Sports Radio. So we will take you right until noon, 10 until noon Eastern time, every single Sunday throughout the NFL season, right here on CBS Sports Radio. Antonio Brown is no longer a Raider. Antonio Brown is a member of the Patriots. We had 2 huge games yesterday, one of which delivered the goods, the other did not in college football. Let's put it all together, throw it into the blender. We lead things off every single Sunday with your gunslinger.
In football's Wild West, he shoots from the hip.
We need men like him to make towns safe for decent people.
DA is the Sunday Gunslinger.
When you have to shoot, shoot, don't talk.
All right, let's do it.
And a reminder, you can always watch Sunday Morning Football at watchda.com, available on any device, anywhere. Here is real-time audio of Antonio Brown's tenure with the Raiders coming to an end yesterday as Oakland announced that he would be released.
They lost it. Let me see it.
Look at Adam Schefter.
The Raiders.
Free! Bro, Adam Schefter! Grandma, they freed me! They freed me, Grandma!
I told you it was gonna work out.
Oh, God, it's the greatest.
For any Raider fan out there, that has got to be the most distasteful, disgusting, ridiculous, and grotesque set of audio. I mean, the Oakland Raiders gave him everything. The Oakland Raiders gave him $30 million guarantee. The Raiders continuously publicly defended him despite the frostbitten feet, despite the helmet fiasco, despite never practicing, despite holding out essentially for God knows what reason. And then here he is celebrating like he just won the Super Bowl when he was released. Released because he created the bleep storm. Number one, Antonio Brown acting like he had just been a kid on Christmas morning getting released from the Oakland Raiders has to give you pause that somehow this was a calculated way to get out. That he wanted out all along, the last couple of days, what have you. I think this is what happened. Antonio Brown has been erratic, illogical, impossible to predict in terms of behavior. I think eventually the Mike Mayock thing, I think he was planning to play for the Raiders all along, and then when Mike Mayock publicly put him on blast, or at least privately did, that wasn't even public, he decided to, in his mind, which is what he does, create an enemy, a villain, out of Mike Mayock, the bad cop, the villain, the enemy from within, the hater. And at that point in time, I think the Patriots probably reached out to Drew Rosenhaus and said, hey, if it's not going to work in Oakland, let us know. And perhaps at that point in time, AB started making a case in his mind how he was above playing for the Raiders, above playing with Derek Carr, above playing for that organization, maybe. And then that's when the Patriots swooped in, the moment that AB decided, you know what, I'm out of here, because he thought he had a different opportunity elsewhere. I think it's a terrible message around the NFL, an absolute disaster, that Antonio Brown could get all of the money and be completely defended within the Raiders organization, and then shoot his way out of town, be a complete headache and disaster, and land at a place that he wants to land, at the winningest franchise of the NFL, and get money. I think it's a disaster, an absolute nightmare. And this is, forget for those of us that hate the Patriots and don't want to see them continue to win, the fact that AB's awful behavior, after he'd been given everything by the Raiders, ended up rewarding him is a nightmare. And the fact that the NFL would have the gall to tweet out, AB's the newest member of the Patriots, the NFL social media account with Antonio Brown in a Patriots uniform, is sickening. Because what does that say? You know what? You don't like where you are, even if the team does everything for you? Hey, whatever. It's fun, right? It ain't so fun if you're a Raider fan. It ain't so fun if you're the Raiders organization, who had gone through all of the offseason doing everything they could to bend over backwards for a total moron. Plenty more on AB as we make our way through the morning. On college football, last night we had a top 10 matchup of LSU and Texas. And here is why the Bayou Bengals are a different type of contender.
Burrow with the snap. Here comes the blitz. Burrow steps away from it. Throws. Catch made. Justin Jefferson has it at the 38. Racing down the far line. Sideline. 10-5. Touchdown, Tigers! 61-yard touchdown reception.
Chris Blair, LSU Radio Network, as the Tigers put up 45 points last night in the win, 45-38. And how about Joe Burrow? This is a guy that threw for 471 and four touchdowns last night on the road in Austin against a top 10 foe. Look, LSU has always had great athletes. They've always had unbelievable defensive backs. They've always had great skill position guys. But what they never had was a big play quarterback. At least they haven't since, say, Jamarcus Russell. One of the things that they have had has been a void at quarterback in terms of creating big plays. And here is Joe Burrow swaggering in and throwing darts all over Austin last night. For LSU, it's a different kind of season, because now they finally have a quarterback that can have them line up against elite competition like Alabama and the rest of the SEC West and the best of the SEC, and walk out knowing that they have a quarterback and they have an offense that's every bit as potent as the opposing offense. And this is how Alabama has created this dynasty. It is that they have been able to evolve from a smash-mouth, ground-attack-based offense to now spread them out and have a mobile quarterback be able to throw, be able to run, much more dynamic offense than they've ever had. And this is what is happening right now at LSU. Tigers fans have got to be thrilled with what they saw last night and through the first 2 weeks of the season. And finally, dark days in Tallahassee, where Willie Taggart and the FSU Seminoles lose again.
Well, the Warhawks line up to go for a point after touchdown kick try. Remember, there were heavy underdogs. It's 45-44. Point after touchdown, huge for the left-footed kicker, Jacob Meeks, to tie this ball game after one overtime. The snap is good. The spot is down. The kick is airborne, and it is no good. Wide to the right. Knowles win. Knowles win. Knowles get a prayer answer in overtime.
I say lose again because if you need a missed extra point to defeat Louisiana Monroe at home, you were a 22-point favorite of this game. You lost. That essentially is a loss. Remember, last week, FSU had Boise State come in and pound the rock and throw the ball and squeeze the life out of the Seminoles in the second half of that game and shut them out of their own house. And then you had Willie Taggart say, well, we got to be better hydrated. Dehydration, we got to be better on that. Then had to walk those comments back. Then last night, Louisiana Monroe had a chance throughout the entire game to steal the game and played nip and tuck with the Seminoles despite being 22-point dogs on the road, and then was about to tie the game up in overtime and blew the extra point. That's essentially a loss. I mean, I know it counts as a W, but that has got to be the worst win ever for FSU. And for Willie Taggart, he did some great things before he got to Oregon. He went to Eugene, and it was a very mediocre season and really didn't prove himself at that next level. FSU grabs him. They didn't really have a better option in their mind. And what we have here is an FSU program that is near rock bottom. I mean, this is a brutal start of the season, and I don't think Willie Taggart will last the entire year. I know they want to give him patience. I know they want to allow him a couple of seasons to build a program. Look, you can't lose to Boise State at home and then almost lose to Louisiana Monroe and expect to keep your job at FSU. That team is way better than that. That talent's way better than that. And to add on to it, Taggart kind of questioning his offensive coordinator last week, his defensive coordinator, and the hydration of his team, and then come out and look like that yesterday? Frankly, I don't think Willie Taggart survives the season. We're off and running here on Sunday Morning Football. When we return, Brian Griese is going to join us. He's one of the analysts on the doubleheader of Monday Night Football tomorrow night at ESPN. He's got the late game Raiders and Broncos. And with everything that has swirled around the Raiders and Antonio Brown, what do we expect in the debut of season number 2 of John Gruden? Brian Griese coming up here next. DA with you. Sunday Morning Football. This is CBS Sports Radio.
NFL action begins next Sunday with the NFL Today, followed by a full slate of regional games. You'll say, you saw it on CBS Sports.
It's Sunday Morning Football with DA.
Oh, it's good to be back here in the driver's seat of my favorite football show each and every week. Sunday Morning Football. There's so many different ways you can listen to the show across this great CBS Sports Radio network on terrestrial radio in the U.S. and Canada. Also, Sirius XM, Channel 206. And you can stream us on your phone at radio.com, using the radio.com app. Also, use the CBS Sports app. You can also listen to us on Apple Music. Also, you can go to the website, cbssportsradio.com, or watch us because the simulcast is cooking at watchda.com, available on any device, anywhere. The Oakland Raiders are now without Antonio Brown, and I don't blame the Raiders for any part of this. The only thing I blame John Gruden and Mike Mayock for is that Gruden took over more than a year ago and wanted to change the culture of the Raiders. He wanted to bring in tough-nosed professionals, build from the ground up, not overpay for veterans, draft and draft well, and he ends up trading away Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper to do so.
but then brings in a head case like Antonio Brown and gives him all the cash, which never made any sense to me. But once they got Antonio Brown there, I don't blame them at all for how they treated him. I thought they treated him better than he deserved. And then cutting bait with him yesterday, I understand. I don't blame the Raiders for this. I think they did what they could do, even though they made a mistake, a calculated mistake in acquiring him. They just wasted a third and a fifth round draft pick to get him, and they wasted an entire offseason of distractions. Monday night, they'll of course now be without him. They're going to open up against the Broncos in the second part of the doubleheader on ESPN for Monday Night Football tomorrow. One of the analysts on the call is Brian Griese. He's going to be alongside Lewis Riddick as well in the booth, and they will be helping call the game along with Steve Levy, Broncos and Raiders. Brian joins us now here on the show. Brian, good morning. Appreciate you dropping on by Sunday Morning Football. Let's begin right off the bat with Antonio Brown. Look, in Oakland, I don't know if his teammates really ever got to know him, but we saw him from the outside as a distraction. When he was in Pittsburgh or now in New England, do you think that the players in those locker rooms give him more leash because he's so productive than the media and maybe fans do?
Well, I think, you know, if you looked in the Raiders locker room, it's going to look a lot different than, if say, if you looked in the Steelers locker room. They have a lot of history with him. They know Antonio Brown much better than the players do in Oakland. They haven't spent a whole lot of time around him. He wasn't around in camp very much. You know, you don't kind of get to know a guy in OTAs and off season. Really, you don't get to know a guy until you're in the trenches with them during the course of the regular season. So I think that the locker room is a little bit naive as to who Antonio Brown really is. I think he puts on a good face at times, but at the end of the day, what we saw in Pittsburgh is the real Antonio Brown. And there's no question he can help a football team. The question is, can he swallow that ego and be a part of something bigger than himself?
Brian Griese's on the call. Monday Night Football's game number two of the doubleheader on ESPN, Raiders and Broncos. Bigger picture about the Raiders. What do you expect from the personality of Oakland in year number two under John Gruden?
Well, under John Gruden and Mike Mayock, I think they're trying to instill some discipline. I think they're trying to get younger. This was the oldest team in the National Football League on week one a year ago, and now they're the third youngest. So they have tried to inject some youth into the team, some speed. All the while, they've signed some off-season veterans that I think will help them both on the offensive and defensive side of the ball. This was the worst team on defense in the league a year ago, and they're not going to get back to competing in the AFC West until they get that fixed. And offensively, you know, everybody wants to talk about Antonio, but they added some pieces that I think really are going to help them. Trent Brown at right tackle, an outstanding tackle in the National Football League. Josh Jacobs, I think, is a breakout player, the rookie running back from Alabama. And then their tight end, Darren Waller, I think, is also going to be a focal point.
Brian Griese joins us ahead of Monday Night Football as the Broncos will take on the Raiders in the second half of the doubleheader. And on the Broncos side of things, a lot of people are considering Joe Flacco's career washed up. Personally, I kind of like this move for the Broncos. What do you expect from Flacco this year in Denver?
I think he's going to stabilize the position, Damon. You know, and there's been a revolving door at quarterback. We know that here in Denver, you know, ever since Peyton Manning in 2015. And John Elway understood he had to stabilize that position. Joe Flacco is not going to be a world beater. He's not going to set the stat line on fire. But he will give you a chance every single day, every single Sunday to win. And with the defense that they have and the potential in the running game with Phillip Lindsay, Royce Freeman, and some new pieces up front on the offensive line, along with Emmanuel Sanders making plays on the outside, Joe Flacco was the right fit for Vic Fangio and the style of team that he wants to have, the way that he wants to win with good defense, special teams running the football, and then Joe Flacco taking some chances over the top. I think that's the recipe that the Broncos want.
Let's take a look at the rest of the AFC West here. Are you of the crowd that believe the Chargers are Super Bowl contenders?
I do, and I realize, you know, Melvin Gordon. Derwin James is a big hit for them, but this is a team that has built from the foundation in the right way. I've got a lot of respect for Anthony Lynn. Obviously, Phillip Rivers and what he has done in his career. That defense is outstanding. This is the most difficult division in football, along with the NFC North. I think the Broncos will be better, but certainly the Broncos and Raiders are looking up at the Chargers and the Chiefs in the division.
Finally, on the Chiefs, do you think LeSean McCoy has an impact on the Chiefs this season?
You know, that's hard to say. I wouldn't bet a bunch of money on that. You know, I think he will contribute. I don't think he's going to be necessarily a difference maker. You know, Andy Reid and his style of offense, they don't depend on one person. When they had Kareem Hunt going, it wasn't all about Kareem. They were handing the ball to Tyreek Hill, throwing the ball to Travis Kelce, making plays. So he needs to be a complementary piece. I don't think they're going to depend on him. But certainly we know his skill set and the way that Andy Reid will choose to use him.
Brian Greasy joins us here on the show. He's going to be handling analyst duties for Monday night's broadcast between the Broncos and the Raiders for ESPN. Brian, appreciate you doing this with us today, my man. Thanks so much. Have a great call on Monday night.
Yeah, my pleasure. Enjoy the start of the season, Damon.
All right, we will. Brian Greasy joining us this morning on Sunday Morning Football. We've got another former All-Pro coming up here on the show. That'll be Brian Mitchell, one of the best return specialists in NFL history. He's now a member of the analyst team for NBC Sports in Washington. And in Washington and around the NFC East, this is an interesting day. All four teams will play one another. So you got the Dallas Cowboys back with Ezekiel Elliott. You have Washington once again with a brand new quarterback, as always. You've got the Philadelphia Eagles loaded, perhaps for another Super Bowl run. And Giants fans wondering when they'll see the next quarterback instead of the current quarterback. We'll talk about that coming up with Brian Mitchell, and it's excessive celebration time as well, which is always our favorite time here on Sunday Morning Football, where we get to re-rack the craziest, zaniest calls of the college football Saturday and announcers losing their minds. We had a couple of great finishes yesterday for week number two. That's all coming up straight ahead. DA, CBS Sports Radio, Sunday Morning Football.
You have a reservation for year-round excitement with CBS Sports. Your ticket to action.
It's Sunday Morning Football with DA.
Welcome back to Sunday Morning Football, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. We're with you every single week throughout the football season, 10 until noon Eastern time, 10 until noon Eastern time right here in all these wonderful CBS Sports Radio affiliates and on SiriusXM Channel 206. Our next guest is a three-time first-team All-Pro. He won a Super Bowl as well. He's a member of the Washington Ring of Fame, and two of his former teams are going to be playing this weekend in the NFC East, Washington and Philadelphia, going at it from Lincoln Financial Field in Philly today. Joining us here on the show, Brian Mitchell, now for NBC Sports Washington. Brian, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, bud. Thanks so much for joining us. And the last time we saw Case Keenum on this field was 2 years ago, NFC Championship game, and the Eagles defense just gobbled him alive. Do you expect Keenum to have a better day this time around?
Well, you look at the Eagles' defense, they're basically the same defense. They're still very good. And then Case is now with a team that doesn't have as good of an offensive line that he had when he was with Minnesota. So you would expect them to have some trouble. With Eric Flowers at left guard, you have Donald Penn, who many had thought was retired, and now he's back. And I think Donald still has a lot of experience, veteran guy who understands how to play the position. But Eric Flowers is that situation where it did not work at tackle for the Giants or the Jaguars. Now the Redskins are going to try him at guard. We'll see if it works. From what I watched this the preseason, he's very good. If he's just going straight at someone, he can engulf him. He's a huge guy. But if he has to move around, he has problems. And I'm sure the Eagles will make him have to move.
Trent Williams is one of the best offensive linemen in football. Many have called him the best at his position, but he is not reporting to Washington. How do you think this thing ends between Williams and the team?
Well, he supposedly is in town now, so that's better than what it was. Last week it was like, well, there's no chance, not a chance in hell that he's going to be here for week one, but he's not here. And then there came out another report that he'll be back sooner rather than later. At least he's now in the state of Virginia. So he was in Texas before, now he's in the state of Virginia. So you would think that something is working towards him returning. I think it'll be great if he does because, like you said, Trent is very good. And I know a lot of people claim He gets hurt a lot. But the only reason that he shuts down, the team was out the playoffs, and they wanted him to shut down. They didn't want to, you know, extend any more injury to him, so he shuts down. He plays hurt. He's very good at what he does. But, you know, when you have a problem with the medical staff, and that supposedly is the reason that he's been holding out, you know, that's hard to overcome. The people that are supposed to put you on the field, you got to have straight faith and trust in those guys. And you don't have that, that's a big problem to fix.
Brian Mitchell joins us here on the show from NBC Sports Washington, looking ahead to the Washington-Philadelphia matchup. And when it comes to this Eagles team, Nick Foles is now in Jacksonville, so there's nobody looking over the shoulder of Carson Wentz. So there's not a lot of questions about Carson Wentz except for durability. Does his durability worry you at all about being the man without a backup plan like Foles?
It worries me if they're going to continue using him like they did before. You know, I've always stated that that job is Doug Peterson's job. When you watch Carson Wentz in the game, they have him doing so much. You know, the read zones and all those things. Basically, you're putting your quarterback in harm's way. But when Nick Foles is in, he basically ran play action pass, drop back and threw the football, or just drop back and threw the ball. It was much more simplified. Well, if Carson Wentz is your guy, and he was on pace to be the MVP a few years back, you know, if he's that guy, you allow him to do the exact same thing Nick Foles did. You have the weapons around him help him. You know, you got a guy like DeSean Jackson who's going to mean the safety's going to always be deep. They're not going to be in the box. And you got Zach Ertz, who I don't think nobody, linebacker or safety, going to check one-on-one. So Alshon Jefferson, you begin to move around like that, they have weapons. So why make Carson Wentz do so much? Simplify it a little bit, make him play the game that Nick Foles did, and you protect him a lot better.
Let's go back to Thursday night. Another young quarterback that was asked to do something and didn't deliver was Mitchell Trubisky. Do you think that Trubisky is an Achilles heel for the Bears from trying to win a Super Bowl?
I think the way that they handle preseason is an Achilles heel. I think Trubisky, we could see his growth from 1 year to the next. When you look at him on Thursday, the whole thing about him, just like a lot of teams, you're going to see this weekend. Guys did not play all preseason, and I don't know what this new era, this new coaching mindset, and think you can not play guys for four games and then throw them into the first game and they're going to just hit the ground running. That does not work. You have to get yourself prepared to play football, and I think the problem with the league right now, even the injury, guys aren't getting prepared to play football, and if they keep doing that, you're going to have quarterbacks coming out the gate stumbling like a Trubisky. He's not Tom Brady, who probably cannot play in the playoffs and then step into a game and be on point. He'll still be a little rusty. He's not. He hasn't had that experience enough yet to be able to do that. And I think coaches have to push it to make sure guys be able to do it.
So you think this league-wide trend of just not playing anybody in the preseason is actually hurting the development of specifically young quarterbacks?
Yes, I think it definitely is. And see, the thing about it is you get a lot of suits sitting in the room and decide they're going to decide how to handle this game of football. The game of football, you have to be in the action to make sure you go out there and you start figuring out how fast it's moving, how quick your decisions have to be. You sit on the sideline, you see somebody else doing it, you know what you're doing? You're seeing how quick their decisions have to be, not yours. So when you get into it, it changes for you a little bit. And I think it is hindered the growth of the young quarterback, hindering the growth of some other players, especially offensive linemen. They have to get into that. And now you got teams sitting their whole starting unit all the way through preseason. It makes no sense.
Brian Mitchell joins us, NBC Sports Washington, former three-time All-Pro in the NFL. So let me ask you then about Odell Beckham. He has not played in the preseason as well. Everybody expects the Browns to have this enormous season and Odell to kind of bounce back. Do you think that he'll be slow out of the gates because he did not play in the preseason?
Odell, just like anybody else, is going to be able to run straight routes. And be if nobody's checking him and they go a go route and they don't hinder him, he'll be able to do that because right now the guys are training, running full speed. They do treadmills. They do all types of drills. But whenever someone shows up, he has to make that instinctive cut. Will he be able to do those things on a consistent basis? Those are the things that affects guys. So I would think that, yes, he'll come out slow, unless the team they're playing defense is awful and they don't really make him have to do a lot. If I'm a team and I'm playing a guy that has not been playing, I'm going to put the pressure on him to make him have to show me not only is he ready to go out the gate, but is he in shape? You know, I can remember the days that I played and I talked to a lot of my old teammates. We went the first week to make sure we knew we can go a whole quarter. Then the next week, two quarters. Then the next week, we would try to push it to three quarters, and we wanted to be able to know that. And then now when you go, if you can push three quarters out of it in preseason, you can damn sure push it out in the regular season the whole game. These guys don't know if they can go a full quarter or a half yet because most of them have not done it.
So do you think that's going to prevent Ezekiel Elliott from running the football more than, say, 12 to 15 times against the Giants?
he can get it more than 12 to 15 times. And I think what happened with Ezekiel Elliott, you'll find out, is he truly in shape? And this is the difference between in shape and in football shape. He might be able to go out there and run 12, 15, 18 of them, but how's the recovery period going to be? You know, once he slows down a little bit in halftime, will he be able to just jump back up in the second half like he would be if he was in the middle of a season or coming to the season after playing four preseason games? You know, it's going to hinder everybody a little bit, but then when you start looking at some of these guys, Zeke is an unbelievable talent. A lot of the guys are just exceptional talent, and they can still overcome it or find a way to still be successful. But they still won't be the guys that they would be if they had approached preseason in a serious manner. And it's not on just players today. It's mostly on the coaches that run offices when guys don't play in preseason and they don't have a tip to put them out there.
Brian Mitchell joining us this morning here on Sunday Morning Football. You can watch him at NBC Sports Washington. He's one of the greatest returners in NFL history, three-time All-Pro, and so good to have his insight here on the NFL's Week Number 1. Brian, it's always a thrill to catch up, my man. Thanks so much. This was great, as always. Hopefully we can do it again this football season.
I appreciate it. I'm sure we will.
You got it. My pleasure. Brian Mitchell, one of the best specialist kick returners in NFL history, joining us here to break down Week Number 1 of the NFL season coming your way. Speaking of Washington and the NFC East, Trent Williams is officially not eligible for Week Number 1. Has not reported, officially will miss Week Number 1. And so the Trent Williams watch continues. Same with Melvin Gordon for the Chargers. Both of those guys will miss action today. One of my favorite segments here on Sunday Morning Football is always excessive celebration, because for those that are just new to the show, as we debut season number 4 of SMF, college football is ripe with crazy play-by-play announcers who absolutely melt down in great endings. And yesterday and last night was no different. We got three great, epic final calls for your newest installment of Excessive Celebration.
The soundtrack of college football chaos. The announcers losing their minds.
We've got a bunch of folks down there.
He caught it.
It's excessive celebration.
We start at Rocky Top because last week the Tennessee Volunteers had arguably their worst loss ever. And Vols fans are upset with Jeremy Pruitt. Vols fans, already the ceiling is collapsing in on the Tennessee Vols football program. It's only week number 2. So here comes BYU into town, and BYU is a respectable national program. Watch out, Vols. You can't afford to fall to 0-2. You can't afford to fall to 0-2. Well, luckily, Tennessee had a lead late, a three-point lead with like 30 seconds left on the clock. But oh no, they gave up a 60-yard pass to BYU to set them up for a game-tying field goal in the end of regulation. So here we go into overtime, and Tennessee leads in overtime. And so now they're just going to make sure that BYU didn't score a touchdown. That's the only thing. They can't score a touchdown. BYU can't score a touchdown in overtime. Oh no, they scored a touchdown.
Wilson, shotgun. Twins to either side. Snap, Zach. Handoff, Tyson. To the 5-4-3. Pilots pushing. He gets to the
goal
line.
He's in.
No signal.
He's in.
They mark him short, but he's
touchdown,
in the end zone.
Touchdown.
They signal touchdown. He got in. And the Cougars win.
Think about the pain of Vols fans today. The Volunteers lost last week to Georgia State at home, a Sun Belt team that went 2-10 last season, nearly lost by 2 touchdowns. This week, BYU comes in and Tennessee collapses, and the Cougars in double overtime had their ball carrier look like a combination of Jerome Bettis, Jim Brown, and Mark Bavaro dragging the entire Volunteers defense into the end zone. That's BYU Radio Network on the call, and oh, the pain. Jeremy Pruitt and Willie Taggart, who's going to get fired first? Colorado, Nebraska. This is a good old-fashioned Big 12 rivalry for a real long time. They're no longer in the same conference, but it doesn't mean there's any bad blood that's been lost. And so here we are, Nebraska, Colorado, Nebraska, top 25 team in Boulder. And the Buffaloes.
Snap, put down, kick is up, it's on its way, and it is no good! The Buffs win! The red turn blue, and the black and gold have knocked off the Huskers for the second year in a row! You've got to be kidding me! Storming the field, and the Nebraska Cornhuskers go down!
Ah, the red turns blue! Mark Johnson and Learfield, IMG for the Buffs. You know, Colorado's now 2-0, and it's the first year of Mel Tucker, who's a longtime assistant, has been an assistant twice under Nick Saban, and there's some real momentum for the Buffaloes program, and for Nebraska, a little bit too much too soon. I saw preseason prognostications of Nebraska as a dark horse in the Big Ten. Adrian Martinez is a Heisman Trophy dark horse. I mean, I said, hey, let's pump the brakes here. Scott Frost lost 8 straight games to begin his career in Lincoln last year. And this year, people were putting them in the top 25. I said, let's be careful. And they did not look great enough in game number one, even though they got the win. And then yesterday, losing to Colorado on that field goal in overtime as Nebraska misses theirs. And I think it's a little too much too soon just yet for Scott Frost and the Husker hype. Now, finally, we have Michigan and Army. And the way that this thing ended was ridiculous because Army had a shot at the end of regulation to win the game on a game-winning field goal, but missed it. So now we got to go to overtime in the Big House. Army trying to shock a top 10 Wolverines team.
He rolls out. He's going. He's looking to pass. He's going to be sacked and fumble. He's fumbled the ball. And did Michigan recover? If Michigan recovers, it's over. Michigan!
Yes! Yes!
Game over! The defense wins it!
Jim Brandstatter and company on Learfield IMG for Michigan Wolverines Radio. I mean, the Wolverines survived 24-21, but Army had multiple chances to win this game late and in overtime, and they are truly fortunate to escape with a win. And for Michigan, what happened to that offense? This was supposed to be an offense that put up more points. And instead, yesterday, they had 14 points through regulation against Army. And that is a mismatch of epic proportions in terms of recruits and size of your players. And for Michigan not to be able to simply win the trenches, push Army around, that's a huge testament to Coach Munkin's team. He's just amazing as what he's built on the shores of the Hudson. So that was great resiliency and toughness shown by Army. They almost did this to Oklahoma last year on the road. But yesterday for Michigan Wolverines fans, you guys have got to be sick to your stomach because this is supposed to be the team that's finally going to knock off Ohio State for Michigan. This is supposed to be finally the year the Wolverines get over the hump and they can barely beat Army at home. They need them to lose or miss a field goal at the end of regulation. That is really rough. Hour number two, as we're coming in hot straight ahead on Sunday Morning Football.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.